Alan Shipton goes in search of Django's people.
For all the gypsies playing, it's always Django is like a big god, you know. Everybody wants to play like Django.
Anywhere a gypsy player goes, he learns something. They are very, very fast to catch music.
It's a very natural way of playing music in the gypsy community. You know, just by picking up a guitar and there's a fire outside.
Django is a gypsy, and he is a gypsy manouche. And that's why he's their god, because he's one of their kind.
Ever since I was a small boy, I've been fascinated by the music of Django Reinhardt and the Manouche gypsies, the people from whom he came. The communities were scattered all over Belgium and the northern part of France. And so I've come here to Bruges, which is one of the medieval jewels of Belgium. On the outskirts of the city lives one of the few remaining families who keep this Manouche music alive, the Lambergers. I first heard them 25 years ago, three generations of gypsy musicians playing the most exciting, dramatic music it was possible to hear. Violinists, bass players, and above all, guitarists, keeping alive the spirit of Django Reinhardt. When I first met Vivi Lamberger, he was still living in a caravan. But for many years now, he and his wife Lucha and their son Char have lived in this house. It's packed with reminders of the old way of life. There are pictures of gypsy musicians and some beautifully made models of caravans, not to mention hanging on the walls Vivi's vast collection of guitars and mandolins.
Oh, we started playing with when we were little kids, so my father playing, my father's brothers playing. This old the family was musicians.
When you started to grow up in this musical family, Vivi, was that here in Bruges or was it in another part of Belgium?
No, it was in Belgium at the time. The time was you can't just stay one day with a caravan at one place, so you have to travel a lot around on Bruges, Holland. There was the police give you 24 hours to stay at one place, and then the other day you have to move out.
And was that what happened to you as a small boy?
Yeah. Day after day.
And so the music must have been something that you played simply in the place that you happened to be.
Yeah, at the time. The pubs, when you go round, you play some numbers and then you go with a hat or something to collect money.
It's always the Manouche branch who plays music. You have the people who are doing the horses, who are selling and buying horses. But it's not Manouche people, that's the Kildare. You have five kinds of gypsies and they're all having the special thing. Of doing, and Manouche are well known for the music. Yeah. I have a picture downstairs. It's Albert's two grandfathers and his great grandfathers. They all play music.
This Romany song's one that the Lamberger family band, the Piottos, played when I heard them in the 70s. It's full of passion and feeling that seems to go back to the very heart of the Manouche. Like all the family's music, it was passed down from father to son. But there were wider influences too from the extended Manouche community.
The story goes that Vivi's own father went outside the family to develop his guitar technique.
I have lessons from Django's brother, my father, banjo guitar.
From Joseph?
Yeah, when he was young. So my father was starting to play most old waltzes at the time for people to dance, and was not really like Django when we know Django now. So,
because we think of that music as the hot club and the basically a jazz repertoire, but there was much more to Django's music than just what we know from the records with Stefan.
It was more waltzes, tangos, and guitar and musettes, all the things.
Vivi's son Char playing here in the Lambergés' front room. Char's a blind guitarist and violinist, and he wasn't even born in the days when Vivi and I played together in England. It's marvellous to hear the old music in such confident young hands. And just like all his family, Char's absorbed the tradition.
Gypsies are really not talking people. That's first point. Second point is that there is not a school as Django Reinhardt style playing. In fact, a lot of gypsies, they don't even know themselves what they are doing. Like, I think Storo, my uncle who plays trumpet, he plays a marvelous solo on Sweet Georgia Brown. But I think that he doesn't even know that this solo was marvelous. It's the instinct and it's feeling more than really knowledge.
Now I'm in the centre of Bruges, and I enter the Bar Abbas, which is where the Lambergés family are going to be playing tonight. So let's go into the bar and see what's going on.
From Char, because when I hear Char playing, he plays with his heart, and that's a big difference between other musicians. Also, you can give him any kind of instrument in his hands and he plays it, so that's also a great thing. He's blind and he can play everything he's getting in his hand, so yeah, I like it.
Seeing your son Char taking on the music to the new generation, has this been something you've been very proud of?
Yes, of course. Yes, of course, because he wants to know everything, he wants to learn everything, and he wants to experiment. Like Vivi, he stays in his kind of music. He won't change. Not that that's not bad at all, but I think a bit of change and experimentation is good for the music. I think so.
The Lambergés are doing their bit to keep Manouche music alive, as well as adding something of their own along the way. And they have that in common with Django Reinhardt. He was always an experimenter, prepared to take risks with his music. And you can hear it in the dozens of discs he made in the 30s and 40s with Stefan Grappelli and the quintet of the Hot Club of France. It's always Django who's pushing at the edges of modernism, of abstraction, of the sound of surprise. Meeting the Lambergés, I'd always thought of Django as the first great European jazz musician, the equal of Americans like Duke Ellington, Coleman Hawkins, and Benny Carter, with whom he recorded. I'd never really considered where his music came from, But gradually, I've come to realise just how important the Manouche side of his character was. His biographer, François Billard.
I think it was a typical Manouche character, you know, very generous, very individual in some way. You can't find it in all these communities, central gypsies, in fact. Because they are all, I should say, gamblers, but in the sympathetic sense of the word, you know, all gamblers, gamblers with music, gamblers with life. And, you know, they do appreciate their freedom, they do like to live.
In fact, he was a genius, not only technically, because everybody is talking about speed. I mean, sometimes he can play and I get tears in the eyes. I don't know if you know this big record when they play. In Brussels in 1940. He plays acoustically. And he first plays a solo only in flageolet. Beep, 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 beep. Very, very softly. And the band is totally dimmed. And then all the saxophones and things, they start to get louder with these long notes accompanying, and then he comes. And this is not really a technical thing. It's like a bunch of energy coming and nice notes, and it's rolling out of this guitar without any problem.
When I hear Django playing with such ease and assurance, and more than a touch of genius, it's hard to understand how he did it, because as a young man, he'd horribly injured his left hand in a caravan fire. There's hardly anyone left now who saw Django in action and witnessed his miraculous playing at first hand. But West Indian bassist Coleridge Good recorded with Django, and first met him in a London nightclub in the 1940s.
He had a reputation that he couldn't play on anybody else's instrument, because his instrument had a special wide neck at the time, because the jazz players had guitars, their necks were a bit on the narrow side. Our guitarist, very fortunately, also had his neck widened. So when he saw this guitar and we invited him to play, can you imagine? how wonderful this was. He sat down and started to play, and I was right behind him, and saw his left hand. You wonder how on earth he could do what he did with that disability that he had with his left hand, because the two fingers were virtually useless, and he played all those wonderful runs with just two fingers, and only brought these other two into play when he was doing large chords. And it was amazing.
When we think of about Django Reinhardt, we think too much about instincts and things like that. You know, he's a natural musician. Of course he's a natural musician. He's much more than natural. He's a very big intelligence. This is much more important. I think sometimes we've got to rethink about music in those terms, about musicians.
I've left the cobbled streets, the bars and the horses of Bruges behind, and I've driven just over the Dutch border, crossing the Ghent Ship Canal, to one of the last remaining gypsy encampments where the Manouche still live. I'm going to meet a very old friend of mine, Fabi Laffertin, a gypsy guitarist, somebody who, for me, catches the spirit of Django perhaps better than anyone else. He has heart, he has feeling, he has soul in his playing, and above all, he has his own ideas. He plays in the Django style, but with very much his own sense of creativity. I haven't seen him for quite some time. 20 years ago, we toured the UK together, so it's going to be quite an emotional reunion meeting up with Fappy again.
Hi.
Hello, Fappy. Hi.
Very nice to see you after all this time.
Yeah, it's about 20 years ago.
Something like that.
Come in, come on.
So what have you got here? You've got guitars on the floor and lots of pictures of Django.
Yeah, I can see.
You've got something really extraordinary here. This is an old jukebox, isn't it?
It's an old jukebox, yeah. Old Rockola.
In working order?
Yes.
Can we hear something?
You want to hear it?
Because there's two marvellous old EPs of Stefan and Django together and the Hot Club.
I hope it's still working. There you go.
Fantastic. It's a real sound of my childhood, this machine. Yeah. I remember these when I was a small boy.
Yeah. I love the sound from the jukebox. It's warm.
Well, you could imagine this filling a whole bar, couldn't you, full of...
They go very, very loud, isn't it? It's very quiet now.
Did you have to work on this to restore it?
Oh, yes. Well, lucky I could fix it by myself.
Started playing, Fappy, going way back to when you were a small child. What was it that made you want to play this music?
My brothers and my uncles, my nephews, and all those guys, they play the music, and I've been grown up with that. It was always music there. And me wanted always to play accordion. Very funny. But there was no money, I think. So I took always a guitar, there was no strings on it. And later on, my brother, they played the music. I always tried to get a guitar from somebody. My father played the violin, but he was not professional. He just played it for the fun at home. And he teach me to play the chords there, make the rhythm. That's all what I did. Till I was 60, I played that music. I knew Django, but it was much too difficult for me to play that. I didn't thought to play that anyway.
So was there a moment, Fappy, when you suddenly decided you did want to play it?
Well, I didn't have a guitar anyway. And a friend of mine gave me a record from Django, a present. So I went home, I put that one record. I just had one record from Django, ridiculous, but anyway. I put it on, I said, oh, that's nice. I must try that, to do that, to play that music or whatever. And I had a Spanish guitar. And I tried to play, and it worked. I didn't know. I could do it, what Django did. I didn't know why or whatever. So I went on like that.
You said that you started out on the Spanish guitar.
Yeah.
And I mean, I remember at one point you used to do kind of flamenco things on, mm-hmm. on Spanish guitars.
Yeah.
But this kind of guitar, that I don't know if this is a Selmer or a copy or whatever it is, but it has a very special sound, doesn't it?
Yes. This is a Selmer. This is a real one. It's the same way Django's playing on it. Quite old. It's really the best guitar in the world. If you mix that, it's the most clean tone from a guitar what you can have. Jungle.
So that kind of attack is something that this guitar really does very well, isn't it? Those stabbing.
Let's say this guitar, if I want to do something, it's coming out.
Got a great sound, isn't it, this instrument?
Yeah.
Think about your life. I mean, when you were very small, did the family travel all the time?
Yes.
Yeah. And you lived in a caravan, I guess.
Yeah. Yes. I remember if I was a little boy, I was in a caravan or wagon, I don't know what it was. I even remember I drove with a horse, but I was very little. It's very fun.
And what about these kind of places here, Fappy, where you live now?
Well, the only thing is, it's not a house. But it's a little bit more free for us. I'm living here. It's me, my brother in front. It's all and all the children. That's it. Nothing more.
So that's some ways the same as when you were all together on the road a long time ago.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, a little bit like that. Yeah, in that tradition. Yeah.
The most important journey in Django's early life was when his family left Holland and Belgium and came here to the Porte de Choisy just outside Paris. This was a big Manouche settlement, lots of caravans, on what was then a wasteland just beyond the city limits. Well, not much sign of caravans today, but it's still something of a wasteland. Huge concrete high-rise blocks. There's a school for largely immigrant children behind me. This was somewhere where Django began his first experience of city living. And he joined many of the other Manouche children running around the streets of Paris.
Paris was a very ideal place for them because it was, I should say, the end of the road, you know, in some way. Because if you consider some come from Spain, others from Italy, others from Hungary, Poland, Germany, sometimes from Russia. If you do this and do this, you've got a kind of crossroad, you know. And there was quite a lot of business in Paris. There were many people working with accordion players, what we call musette, which is the popular accordion. And people like Django began to work in that musical area, which is very important, I think.
As I left Choisy on the metro, some buskers started playing traditional musette. This mixture of guitar and accordion is still very much a feature of today's Parisian music. The accordionist Richard Galliano has done more than anyone to update the traditional style, especially in his collaboration with the Manouche guitarist Pirelli Legrand.
People take a bad look at it, you know, because of those musette walls, and because in France it represents the ballrooms, you know, where people would dance to it. And Richard got pretty tired about that, and so he decided to reincarnate the modern accordion, actually. He plays a lot of waltzes, you know, but he has his own technique, and it goes, think of slightly somewhere else.
And it strikes me, listening to the two of you, that I can feel you moving in slightly different harmonic directions with him, because he sort of sets out a challenge and you go with it.
Yes, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, so we try to communicate a lot through music.
Borelli began his life on the road in a caravan. But just like Django, he arrived in Paris when he was very young, and that made a vital difference to his music. It seems to me that all the Parisian gypsy guitarists, since Django's own time, have absorbed a mass of other urban influences in their work. Nowadays, the place to come to in Paris to hear contemporary gypsy jazz is the Duc de Lombard in the Châtelet district.
En ce moment, il y a des endroits comme ici, d'ailleurs, Duc des Lombards, ou Enfants Pinot.
There are places like these, oui. The Duc des Lombards, aux Enfants Pinot, where guitars are very well received. We guitarists are very much in demand, especially those with a gypsy sound, but also all sorts of music. Jazz clubs have often experienced difficulties, and a jazz man will never be a millionaire. I'm a jazzer because I like the adventure.
Si je choisis d'être jazzman, c'est parce que c'est une aventure.
The Gitan guitarist, Boulou Ferré. Boulou's musical adventure began with his own family. His uncle, Barreau, played with Django. His father, Matelot, specialised in waltzes and musette, and he and his brother, Elios, play modern jazz. But there were particular pressures on Boulou, who was hailed as a child prodigy. He made his first records when he was 12. How does anyone meet such a challenge?
Vous posez une drôle de question, ami. Moi, j'ai toujours cherché à progresser, à évoluer, et
I've always tried to seek to progress, to evolve as an artist. What has helped me a lot when I was 17, 18, 25 is that I was able to question myself. It's important when you've been a child prodigy at 12. You often hear of child prodigies singing beautifully when they're very young, and then once their voice has settled, they don't know what to do. Stop. Not me. I've always evolved as a musician, continuously developing new ideas which were not always fashionable at the time. In 68, I did flirt with free jazz, but I didn't really take it much further. Success is important, but what is more important is that you remain authentic. Your public can feel that, you know.
Vous imitez tout votre cœur. Eh bien, le public, il adhère.
Ferré's interpretation of Django's Nuage. To me, it's got the authentic ring of the gypsy music I heard in Belgium, coupled with ideas from contemporary jazz. Plenty of space and harmonic challenges in the improvisation. Boulou has this in common with another Parisian gypsy guitarist, Christian Escudé. I'm keen to find out why he's ventured even further from the gypsy tradition.
In the 70s, the free jazz was the new fashion. And like everyone, a lot of musicians, I was obliged to play that kind of jazz music, even if it was not my favorite style of jazz music, but it was like that, or you say it all.
And then fusion really was something which you got most involved with John McLaughlin.
Yes, I played in duet with John McLaughlin for 6 months, and he bring me in the USA for the first time, Japan and Brazil, South America, and he bring me out of the frontier of the France. And of course with him, because everyone knows it's one of the figure of the jazz fusion, so I was obliged again to play jazz fusion. But when Mike Laughlin called me to play with him, I took the acoustic guitar to play with him, because we, our duet was two acoustic guitars.
Is it hard?
And the right hand is very important on the acoustic guitars, more than the electric, I think so.
Christian went on to form the Trio Gitane, going back to his roots in some respects, but with a new approach to the music, something he shared with the group's founder members, Boulou Ferré, and Django's son, Babik Reinhardt.
I liked Babik Reinhardt because he was a musician, very open. Of course, his father was a great influence on him, but all the time he tried and he liked to hear some news, like George Benson, Pat Metheny, or I don't know, you know, or whatever. For me, Babik is a really good, very intelligent guy, because he was really open, and he wasn't all the time on the roots, his father wrote.
Bon, c'est vrai qu'on était trois guitaristes avec trois personnalités. Escudé avait son style.
We were three musicians with each our own personality. Escudé brought his style. Babik had, well, how to describe Babik, who is no longer with us. He had a beautiful sound, somebody with a very good taste. He didn't work on his technique, he couldn't be bothered. It was someone who played music from his gut, intuitively. He was very spontaneous and had a very good taste, a beautiful sound on his electric guitar. He had a great sense for melody. That was his style. I had my cultural and classical baggage. So when we started rehearsing as a trio, we didn't intend to sound like a typical gypsy band. We had to sound different.
These Parisian players, Boulou, Christian, Pirelli Le Grain, as well as Babik Reinhardt before his death last year, took their music about as far as possible from the Manouche tradition. But in the last 6 or 7 years, I've been amazed to see all of them come back to playing more and more in the Django style. Attraction today of a musician who died 50 years ago.
Django Reinhardt, je dirais pas dans la guitare manouche, dans la guitare gypsy, je dirais dans la guitare.
Django Reinhardt's not just in gypsy and manouche gypsy music, but in the universal music, has been a model, like Chaplin has been in the movies. He was a great man, blessed with powerful musical thinking. Today we speak of manouche guitar and gypsy guitar music because we like labeling. But I'm convinced that both gypsy families, the Reinhardt and the Ferrés, were the actual founders of European jazz.
Ben, c'est eux qui ont fait finalement, avant la lettre, le jazz européen.
why do they return to the Django style as it was in the 30s? Maybe because they, in some way they fail in their researches and they lost part of the audience. And maybe because of that, that they come back some to some more classical gypsy style. But that's not only their fault. I mean, it was not so easy for their usual audience to understand where they wanted to go. Same as thing for Django. I think if Django didn't die, there were not so many people to listen to him. Maybe not now, but I should say in the 60s, and the end of the 50s. He was going too fast, too quickly.
To play this music again, and you know, that particular guitar style, I was like struck by so many memory flashes, you know, that just passed by. Like, it was like, oh, I said, wow, that's, I remember when I was 15, you know, it was like, it was quite amazing. And I also did remember most of Django's solos then all of a sudden, you know, it all came back to me. That was quite amazing because I haven't really played that music like over 15 years, I think. You know? I used to play it with my brother once in a while when I, you know, when I got together with him. But it was more like, you know, all those memories that I, when I was a kid, just by playing the instrument.
Pirelli Le Grand. And even though my old friends in Holland and Belgium haven't strayed quite so far from their Manouche roots, they too have returned to Django's music.
Why you come back? It's a very good question.
Yeah.
Look, I did everything. I did Combezi, Duke Ellington, everything. I loved, the most thing what I loved was Duke Ellington thing. The Cotton Club was a wonderful thing, wonderful music to play. Okay. But for me was, okay, it's finished for me. There's nothing anymore here. So I went, well, what can I do more? I go back to Django. Why? There's no end. There's nothing. There's even now, there's no end. I do. I play for years. And there's no end. I need a space to get there. That's it.
Exciting gypsy music, it's music you can't stand still. That's why I think it's nice music.
It was something that they don't want to miss.
Want to not to come back to the past, you know, but to build a real future with a real foundations. Of course, it can sometimes seem strange, you know, say, well, we try to learn a tradition which belonged to years ago. Well, this is a part of the travel they've got to do to learn how to be in the present. I think that's the problem for art in general. If we want future, we want to grow something behind our feet.
It's this sense of tradition that the musicians I've met in Belgium, Holland, and France have in common. and through finding out more about their long history and the way the music's passed from generation to generation, I've learnt a lot about what Django Reinhardt brought to jazz. It's not just about the music. What Django also had were the qualities of today's Manouche, a jousting sense of competition, an ability to assimilate other styles and types of music in an instant, and the idea that life itself is a challenging, exciting improvisation.
Yeah, the moments they have something. It's like they're speaking. It's the same. Let's say you brought up with the Manouche and you speak. You learn the language very well, very, very well. You have people. They're speaking very, very, very well. But they're not Manouche, but they can speak very well. But still, if they say, let's say, they're speaking for 1 hour and there's just one little word like that. And I say, oh no. I could hear it. Say it's no Manouche. Even if he can look black or whatever. You can hear, I can hear it. Straight away. It's the same with the music. Okay.
We have a friend of us here in this room who comes from England and who plays the double bass. I have never played with him in my life. My father did a long time ago, so he doesn't really remember, and I'm very curious. So we would like to ask Alan Chipton on stage.
I enjoyed it very much, it's magnific. But I also admire the person who played the contrabass just in the last number. It was very, very fine, very fine.
The Lamberger Family Band. Charles Lamberger, guitar and violin. Vivi Lamberger, rhythm guitar, with Alan Shipton on bass, who also presented Django's People, which included the voices of Lucha Lamberger, Fappy Lafertin, Christian Escoudet, Pirelli Legrand, Coleridge Good, François Billard, and Boulou Ferré, with translations read by Gabriel Wolfe. Technical presentation was by Hugh Robinson, and the producer was Jessica Isaacs.